You're now listening to The Brian Callen Show with your host, Brian Callen.
Testing 1, 2. Yeah. Hunter Moss just put the mic back together. Talking to that mic, Hunter.
Testing 1, 2.
Yeah,
oh, did it. Jackpot.
Hunter fixed the microphone. My son told someone to shut up, and I had to go and
scroll. Brian, what strategy did you use in terms of instilling discipline in the
man? I force my will upon him.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I pick him up, sit him down, and I go, look at me right now, and then I scold him. I'm not a child psychologist.
No, but I think that's a very Cesar Millan type thing to do, right?
Like, I guess, but not really. I mean, I love him, you know, so and he'll go, and he'll make me laugh, and then I don't have any... I resent loving another human being that much. He's just so cute.
Yeah.
He's so goddamn cute.
Well, you know, some people believe that that's a deliberate evolutionary strategy.
I'm sure it is.
To manipulate you.
Yeah.
So that you provide food for him.
Yes, they say that, you know, like I think Socrates said that man loves immortality and your children represent immortality and it's your genes and there's a biological need to get... But fuck off. Yes, I suppose, but don't reduce... children, those angels, those complicated, incredible organisms to, you know, just an extension of my biology. I see kids I've never met before in my life, and I love them. I love all children.
But that's the whole point. They're tapping into your psychology. There's a very specific set of features that make a kitten cute or a puppy cute or a child cute.
Innocence.
Yeah.
It's also their innocence. It's also their joy.
Also their forehead size.
But see, yes, they are adorable, but they're so innocent and they're so loving. They're morons. Don't get me wrong. They're morons. They don't know things. They don't have context.
They haven't uploaded culture yet.
They haven't. That's right. That's a good point. But they're so innocent and they're so... I love watching them play. Mm-hmm. Joseph Campbell talked about this shaman, this great shaman, and as he was dying... He said, I've heard the sound of the universe. And they huddled around. What is it? And he said, listen. And in the background, children were playing.
Mm-hmm.
He said, it's the sound of children playing. And I like those little simplicities in life.
Mm-hmm.
I like that Daniel Robinson, who has those courses, the great ideas of philosophy. We had him on the podcast. I said, you know everything. He said, I said, what have you learned after 75 years? He said, well, I suppose... It's important. Manners can never be underestimated. Their importance can never be underestimated. And I think it's important to look down at your shoes from time to time. In other words, be humble.
Yeah. But so to sort of like tie this all together and bring it back, what you're saying is that, you know, science is great because it allows us to figure out the natural world and harness it to our benefit and all of that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is that still we are creatures of belief. And creatures of emotion, and we need to be spiritually uplifted, and we need those experiences, we need meaning, and all of that sort of stuff.
Well, I cannot live on science alone.
Yeah.
I do. I need emotion. I do need meaning, and there are things like purpose and meaning that are hard to measure. Like, you can't use all your scientific instruments to measure purpose and meaning.
Well, but that also doesn't give you, essentially, that doesn't give you myth and narrative and all of those other things sort of give you meaning and purpose, which brings me to ISIS.
Really?
Yeah, because the point is that I think, you know, very often people talk about how, you know, I mean, ISIS is an idea and it's competing and it's doing quite well.
Mm.
But the point is that what does ISIS really have to offer? It has to offer, you know...
Ash,
heartache. Death, destruction, all that sort of stuff. So it's not a doctrine that should necessarily be appealing.
Well, but it does offer exclusivity. It does offer... It offers
belonging.
Yes, fraternity.
That's right.
Belonging, a club that very few people can get into unless you've got the guts and shit for young men.
Yeah. But I think that's the interesting thing is it's, you know, we all sort of recognize that there needs to be some better alternative, but that better alternative doesn't exist. So I think the success of ISIS is more about the failure of the rest of the world to provide belonging and fraternity and all of that sort of higher purpose. So I think that, you know, one of the things we have to figure out in mixed mental arts is what is a better alternative to ISIS?
Well.
And I have a proposal.
Go ahead.
It's called the Callen Fate.
The Callen Fate. That's very good, dude. That is very good. And that being, by the way, can you imagine if we ran the world? It would be so lame because we'd be like, you know, we'd be mildly annoyed at the, like, you know, Airbnb just sent out this thing about how they believe in inclusive.
Yeah.
Like, they're going to offer bias training or anti-bias. And fuck off. Like, I have respect the sentiment. Yeah. I know they have to do something. But, you know, it is the person's house, and they do have a right to, you know, allow you in or not.
Yeah, totally.
And it's just the way it should be.
But
you know, if a transgender person or a black person or whatever wanted to rent my place, I guess what? If your money's good and you got good credit, you're coming in. You know, I don't care. Oh no, don't get your transgender cooties on my toaster. This is not how I think, you know.
But that's the great democratizing and humanizing power of trade, right?
It is.
That you don't give a shit. And if you,
that is so true. I mean, commerce is, it really is commerce, just, and sport and those kinds of things, they melt away. Entertainment, all mm-hmm. commerce, entertainment, all of that stuff melts away the color lines. It does.
If you make me laugh,
yeah.
If you are inspire excellent me. At what you do and inspire me.
If you make me and money.
If you make me money. Like, yeah. I don't really care who you are.
When you work together, when you work with, you know, people and you deal with their day-to-day moods and their wishes and their, you know, their beliefs and, you know, yeah. I worked with all these, in DC I sold Time Life books and I worked with almost all black people.
Mm-hmm.
And they were black people, as in they were from DC and their experience was a black experience, which really means that they grew up in shitty neighborhoods.
Which is not necessarily the black experience.
No, but in this case, this was the Washington, DC black right. experience, where people were fighting pit bulls and selling crack within view of the White House.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, it was bad. It was, yeah. It was the 80s and people were getting shot and they were all, you know, selling Time Life books and trying to make a living doing cold calling. They dressed well, they were proud, and they mm-hmm. were like anybody else looking for a better life, etc. They had kids. But what I thought was interesting was, as we were spending all our time together and trying to sell books to a-holes all over the world who kept saying no, you know, you pass the time by laughing and being silly and coming up with your own language, and mm-hmm. before you know it, of course, you're not really thinking about whether or not you're black or white.
All
I remember doing was trying to pick up this very sexy black woman named Christina, mm-hmm. which doesn't seem like a very black name. I'm sorry. Christina. I've never
but
been.
It doesn't. It's not so much that the names are unusual, it's the spellings are unusual.
She was so hot, and I yeah. remember trying to, I was like, I just wanted to date her so badly, but yeah. I just looked at her, and she was such a fucking specimen of a human being, and I thought, there's no way you're going to be attracted to me. I'm just too white and medium. Your boyfriend has got to be Scottie Pippen or Michael right. Jordan, because you're the female equivalent of it.
Do you feel like that has driven your comedy and sort of your purpose in life?
Gee, I wonder.
Do you think that, like,
you know, you mean because last night I did a bit. I did 25 minutes on being an English supervillain, and then another, that was 15 minutes, and then another 10 minutes being a Spanish dancer.
Yeah. Huh. Do you yeah. think that Christina has driven your insecurities, or do you think Christina was like the perfect manifestation of your insecurities?
You know, I have a big dick, Hunter.
And, that is, and that is
so
what I,
that's
that
not
is
really
what
I worry
saying.
About. No, I wonder where that comes from. I think a lot of it is, as a boy, you're fed this mythology.
But why do you think you feel it particularly acutely?
Oh, it might be my dad's
size.
Oh,
yeah, it might be.
And me not being as big, and then having this prototypical Marine, this male, and the idea of masculinity, which, by the way, when it comes to my father, especially when he was a young man, couldn't have been more prototypical.
Yeah.
I mean, big, gruff, powerful.
Your father is a human
tall,
bear.
Yeah, he's a human bear. And
yeah.
So when that and also growing up in the developing world, where most people ate rice mm-hmm. and legumes and maybe some fish if they could afford it.
Yeah.
They weren't milk, meat, and wheat eaters.
Mm-hmm.
And so they didn't, you know, he's Germanic and Irish and a giant man. And these people were Pakistani and Indian and Southern Indian.
And Filipino.
They were small and Filipino. Yeah. They were all small.
Yeah.
So he just looked like this giant, this,
right.
this inferno, this giant, mm-hmm. this tower. He was a towering
yeah.
figure in my experience. Big wrists.
Yeah.
His wrists were too big for, I think he bought a Rolex Presidential and had to get extra links added to it.
I need more
that's
gold
when you know,
in my watch.
That's when you know you're a fucking so man. When your wrists are too big for the watch you
yeah,
bought.
For the Rolex you bought.
You got to send it back to Rolex and have them add on a couple
yeah,
more
exactly.
links. Throw on a couple more links from my big man wrists. Meanwhile, I still have girl wrists.
Brian.
I know.
But so what we're sort of tapping into here is a lot of this is about tribe, right? Like you formed a new tribe at Time Life Books, right?
Yeah.
Where, you know, it sort of transcended your previous tribes, right? And people are very good at forming tribes very easily,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that what do tribes deliver? They deliver belonging, they deliver purpose, they deliver a sense of community, a sense of support, and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, we still have those tribal longings because we haven't, you know, even though our culture has moved ahead so quickly, right, the biology hasn't changed.
Yeah.
And essentially, the modern world is very bad at delivering that sense of tribe and belonging and average.
100%.
And so that's why we need to go back to the idea of the caliphate.
I like the caliphate. It's just that you and I would be, I guess what we'd be is we'd be like, look, we're very inclusive.
Yeah.
Just don't be politically correct about it. And, you know, but make sure you eat meat. But then again, we do respect vegans. And, well, I guess the caliphate would be this. It would be, let's talk about what the credo would be.
Exactly.
The credo would be, we're the rulers, but we're definitely going to stay the fuck out of your way. However, we believe in law and order to an extent. If you make a promise, keep that promise. Contracts have to mean something. Well, no, let's go back. Institutions must be incorruptible. They must have integrity. Our courts must have integrity. Corruption will be punished to the letter of the law, to the full extent of the law. We will have stable, strong institutions. Courts, the executive, the judicial.
Now you can see why ISIS is currently beating the caliphate is beating the caliphate.
Shit.
Yeah. So I think that's part of what we can do today is we can start to figure out what would this caliphate be, right? And what are the things that you would look for in a tribe to join?
See, I go to a lot of things. I think of things like when I see candidates, they're hijacked by a couple things. One is military spending.
Mm-hmm.
Got to look strong on the military.
Mm-hmm.
Two is entitlement programs for mm-hmm. the elderly. Three is farm subsidies. You got to take care of our farmers.
Mm-hmm.
Four is you've got to be a good Christian. You just right. have to be a good Christian. Trump is the exception to that. He's kind of left that alone, but
mm-hmm.
you've just got to believe in our Lord.
No, I mean, Trump is actually, he's been born again. Officially.
Yeah, well, you always have to be. And so those things for me, and finally, you know, you probably have to be, I think those are the four big ones. And so I would, my caliphate, if I were ruler, I always think to myself, I would have none of those allegiances. I would hold to some certain truism. Evolution is true. It is not a theory. It's about as much theory as the theory of gravity. It's true.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the science points to, so I'm going to be scientific about this. Religion is between a man and his God.
So separation of church and state.
100% to separation of church and state.
Responsive to the evidence, whatever the evidence may be.
Responsive to the evidence, whatever the evidence may be.
Okay.
That's right. As far as farm subsidies, as far as those kinds of things, you'd have to look into it. But I don't think there would be a debate. But I've always had a problem with artificially propping up any marketplace for a long time, especially when that marketplace is an economy of influence.
So what you're saying is that you would be pro-market rather than pro-business.
I live in a market.
That's
you know,
right.
I live and die by the market personally, right. as a comedian
mm-hmm.
and as an actor, and I've never lived any other way. I've never had anybody bail me out besides my dad when I really needed money, and I'm lucky that way. But in all seriousness, I've never had anybody bail me out that way. I have to rely on my imagination. I think sport is a good metaphor for that as well. You either make the NFL or you don't. It doesn't matter how popular you are. It doesn't matter how much money you have. Just talk to Tim Tebow and Johnny Manziel. It doesn't matter, man. It's the way it is. You can work your ass off, and sometimes there's just not a place for you. You know, and I think that's very good, and that's part of what makes this country great. I do think that, and again, as I get older, I don't think that the government has only very limited function. I become probably a little bit more of a centrist. I do think that there is something we can do about climate change. Well, let's back up. I mean, I think I'm all over the place here, but I think that, for example, climate change, if you really look at the science, seems to be a looming threat. It does seem to be at least something real.
Well, something that recently happened to me, you know, I was with a friend of mine from England, and he said, you know, I was saying, you know, blah, blah, blah. There are ways to like move forward on getting off oil and coal without having to deal with the controversy of climate change. And he just started laughing. And he says, that's the most American thing you could have said, because nowhere else in the world is it controversial.
That's right.
Rest of the world is sort of moved on.
Well, I think the United States, this is where Christianity comes in. I mean, I'm sorry, but I actually believe that a lot of people, especially on the right, and I'm more right-wing, certainly, and I'm a marketplace guy, but a lot of people on the right, and I'm speaking for them, but I really think a lot of people think God would never let this happen to us.
Well, I mean, that's the question, is that the founding belief that leads to the conclusion, or is that the rationalization that comes in afterwards, right?
But it could be both, you know, in some ways. It could certainly be the idea that, you know, human beings tend to be optimistic and you know.
Well, not all human beings. I mean, there are Russians.
When you've suffered the when you've suffered the Mongol invasions and the Nazi invasion, and suffered and you've lived through World War I and II, you can't help but be a fucking realist.
But specifically to be a pessimist, which is also to be a realist.
Be
paranoid, which is what, you know, Russians are, and that's fine. But the point is that those are, again, complementary mindsets, right? Yeah. Optimism and pessimism. But the point is that culture, again, like, there are biases that different cultures have. So the bias in American culture is to be optimistic, which is to say to be delusional very often.
Yeah.
Because I was just in Holland, and, you know, Holland, most of Holland is, you know, below sea level, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's, you know, always an inch away, the little Dutch boy with his finger in the dike.
Yeah.
You know, they're the whole, it's amazing the amount, the degree to which the whole culture is structured around the fact that, like, they have to work together, because if they don't work together, like, try being an individualistic Dutchman, right?
So
they do have individualism in terms of trade and all that sort of stuff, but they're able to be individualistic when it comes to trade and enterprise, and then they are able to put on the polder hat, right, the dike hat, where they're like, okay, but separately, we're all going to flood to death if we don't, like, communally ensure that the infrastructure is good.
Yeah.
And, you know, Americans don't do that, right? They are, like, individualistic when it comes to business. But then you look at American infrastructure and it's a disaster, right? So, you know, again, they've, you know, talk about people who have really moved on with climate change. They've already accepted the fact that probably, you know, they're going to be in the same position as Bangladesh.
Wow.
And that they then have to engineer and make policy based on the idea that, you know, sea levels are going to rise, and then some of the country will be flooded and be abandoned, and, you know, some of it will be protected and all these sorts of things.
Jesus.
But, you know, I mean, that's the reality. They don't have the luxury of, you know, having this huge continent and being, you know, having much of it be above sea level.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's a very different mentality that is developed there.
Yeah.
But so I think the what this all sort of drives towards, and, you know, sort of what is the underlying principle.
The Caliphate.
The central guiding principle of the Caliphate, right, is firstly that human hardware is more or less the same.
Uh-huh.
But that human software culture is vastly different, and that we are now in a position where we
you'll hear that on stage in my next special,
which I'm excited for.
And you guys heard it first here. At least I'm stealing from Mott's, and
But that's the whole point. So this also,
I'm borrowing culture. I'm assimilating
you're
culture.
You're assimilating culture from me, and I assimilated it from people like Joe Henrich.
There you go.
And then he's assimilated it by assimilating lots
of
other people's ideas.
I love that expression. We have the same hardware.
That's right.
It's the software that's
different. And but what you're seeing is that it's this movement and diffusion of ideas, which is the marketplace, and that unlocks human potential and human innovation and all that sort of stuff. And so that the focus of the Caliphate is to evolve culture that is better suited to the environment in which we live. Right, and incorporated within that, you have the responsiveness to science. You have the importance of the free market and the openness idea. The
which opens up culture
to
culture,
which opens up culture to culture.
Has cultures have sex?
That's right, exactly.
Literally,
yeah. And so that is the point: is that you want to have as much idea sex as possible. Like the better,
I love idea sex, and I love real sex.
That's right.
Black people have sex with Korean people.
Yeah.
Have sex with white people. Have sex with it's great.
So the Caliphate is based on orgies of intellectual orgies,
a lot
sexual
of sex.
Orgies.
Yes.
That is the central founding doctrine.
Meld your minds and your genitals.
Exactly. So that's sort of like,
find your other half, but preferably have it be a different color. Brown the races. Brown the races.
So the point is, it's like your onions. Just as you brown your onions, you want to brown your races.
Although there's nothing like a natural blonde, or there's nothing like a pure blonde or a pure redhead.
No, there's a lot to be said for that too.
Oh yeah,
but we want it's like a box of
We'll keep some of that. You gotta have some.
You want diversity. You want diversity.
Yeah,
and diversity doesn't mean that everybody's all melded together. It means you got some of this, you got some of this. The point is, it's like the experience that you want on Abbot Kinney, where you can sit there and just watch the world go by. All the different flavors of the rainbow.
The best.
Yeah.
The best.
So, but that I think is the central idea of the Caliphate, is that, everything is structured to promote orgy, right?
Yes.
To promote idea orgy and to promote physical orgy and all that sort of stuff. And if you are going to Arab men who, let's be honest, like they want to go over to, Syria so they can have apparently non-consensual sex, right?
Well, I mean, you mean with the what do you mean? The
there's a lot of raping going on in Syria.
Yeah.
And
sexual Iraq
slavery.
With the
Yeah. So
I don't know that's why young Syrian men join
it's
ISIS.
Part of
I think they join ISIS not to be rapists, but because they actually think there's something noble in fighting an Islamic caliphate.
It's a full...
You probably have bad people, of course, within that.
There's a full range of promises, from a promise of dignity, a promise of some great historical mission, and
having
also...
Having a sexual slave.
Having a sexual slave. Yeah. Like, let's be honest. Like, Jesus. If that's part of the appeal,
and
murdering...
You
get to like go
booty,
and like
booty,
literally. And like a real life video game.
All men did that. All men,
that's right.
That would always be the case. There's booty there. There's the spoils of war are not just gold and bread.
It's also
pussy.
Booty.
Yeah,
booty
quite
in
literally.
Both senses. Yeah.
God, it would suck to be a woman.
Oh
a man just gets his head cut off. A woman gets basically impregnated by some dude who doesn't even speak a language. And,
yeah.
Oh, Christ.
I think that now the Caliphate is starting to get to be a more appealing alternative.
Yeah.
Like, if I was a young Egyptian dude and I'm like, what are my options, right? And it's like, okay, I can go off and I can join ISIS and,
Die,
and, have a not very satisfying
just be
life.
Just a bunch of dudes in the dust.
Yeah, sounds kind of terrible.
And
or
have
I
to
can
deal
join...
with Delta Force and SEAL Team 6.
That's right.
Yeah, and a bunch of bombs.
Or I can be part of the great historical mission to build the global Caliphate.
Mm.
And in the global Caliphate...
A gun, but a different kind of gun.
What kind of gun do you use?
Your dick.
Amazing. That's the
your
thing.
Your dick and your brain. We're looking for dicks and brains, everybody.
Because that's the thing. What does a Syrian 10 look like versus what does a Los Angeles 10 look like?
I would imagine when the Syrians have a lot of food and peace, they're beautiful.
Beautiful.
Women.
But
in wartime can be
not so
can
great.
Wreak havoc on your skin and your mood.
It really can.
Yeah.
That's sort of the real casualty of war that people don't talk about is like what it does to your complexion.
Yeah. I really do, I think that part of what is important about reading, when you sort of become aware and make yourself aware of the suffering that is going on in places like Syria, I swear to God, every time I get into my bed and I feel how comfortable it is and it's quiet outside and I don't have to worry about anything other than getting a good night's sleep. My kids are well fed, safe and sound in their bed. I don't take that for granted.
Nope.
It is rare. They're vaccinated. I don't have to worry about all those things. Lions and tigers and viruses and poisonous spiders. And more importantly, a government that can knock on your door and take your property or take your woman or take your children. God damn. We're lucky.
Well, there are some people yet in the United States who do worry about that.
I still own guns. Yeah, well, I've still got some of that militia in me.
But the thing is that, you know, I mean, in order to really secure that, right, you have to deal with the places where people don't have that. And you have to find ways to spread that prosperity.
We are doing that, right? So
are we? Well, again, this comes back to complacency.
No, I think that we have made progress. And progress, you know, Obama... I listened to a speech he gave to Howard University recently at their commencement speech. Did a great job. And he said, I'm going to say some things that are pretty controversial. One is that we are better off, even race relationships are way better off than when I graduated from college in 1983.
The overall trend is up.
Well, but more importantly, you know, all of Latin America, now that FARC has sort of signed this peace deal in Colombia, all of Latin America essentially is at peace. There are drug problems and things. Venezuela's on fire. But... for the most part, they do have democratically elected governments. It used to be dictators and strongmen propped up by the United States, well, with the exception of Nicaragua, which was propped up by the Soviet Union. And there were real wars going on.
But a democratically elected government is not the same thing as an inclusive system.
No, it doesn't. And there are still huge issues, of course, in Brazil and everything else. But you have to give credit for the fact that, you know, the places that are really at war are between Nigeria and Pakistan, that belt where one in six people on the globe live. Five out of six, according to this article in the New York Times, and I think it was an editorial, five out of six people are not living in what you would call countries at war, meaning countries, sovereign nations fighting over territory or resources with their armies. And that's significant. There is, by and large, we have, I think, made progress. Steven Pinker would agree with that and things like that. Doesn't mean that you say there's no more work to be done. We have massive tragedy and massive problems going on, primarily in, it seems, the Middle East, the Arab, the Muslim world. There's something going on there.
There's
a debate raging within that community.
Well, I think that's the thing is that if there's one, it's one thing to talk about violence and the trends in violence, but there are other threats that we have to deal with,
yes.
Right? For example, environmental threats.
Yeah.
There are ideological threats within the United States, mm-hmm. Right? You know, I think when Fukuyama wrote the end of history and The Last Man, right? It seemed that democracy had won, right? He didn't say that the final victory was going to happen. He said there were back and forth movements and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, Putin, the rise of Putin has moved towards a totalitarian state. He has promoted and spread totalitarianism throughout Eastern Europe, right? He's divided the EU. He's helped break up NATO, right? He's creating dissent within NATO. So I think that there are counter-historical trends that are moving away
from... It's true. I wonder because... The Soviets, the Russians, seem to have very little to offer other than they don't even have really an ideology that they stand behind. They're capitalists. I mean, it's worse than that.
They're oligarchs.
They're oligarchs,
which is not the same thing as capitalists.
No, of course it's not. They're oligarchs, but it used to be they had this egalitarian philosophy. They had a philosophy, an ideology in communism that people could sink their teeth into. People could say, well, this is in theory, this is something I can get behind, you know, or at least a variation of it. Let's call it socialism and things. The Soviets don't even represent an idea anymore. The Soviets seem to represent, when I think of the Russians and Putin, I think of a band of thick-necked toughs with guns who are willing to kill you with odorless, tasteless poisons, fucking bombs, and they're just not held accountable. They're just brutal men who don't offer. I mean, when was the last time you bought a Russian product?
Well, the point is
that even Russian oil.
But the point is that may be what you see from outside, but there's something very different going on within Russia, right? So Putin has really developed the narrative that firstly, democracy doesn't work.
Yes,
right?
I understand all that, but it's also made his country weaker.
It may have made him...
He's got an 82% approval rating or some bullshit like
but
that.
But that's the whole point, yeah. is that it's possible to create a totalitarian regime where everybody is worse off, but if everybody buys into it, then it doesn't really matter, because the point is that the world has gotten worse off.
I don't know that everybody's bought into it, is what I'm saying. Russia, because he's the only alternative, because they don't have any viable alternative, because people are drawn to strength. But at the end of the day, Russia's life expectancy
is falling. But what do you think
is
happening in Turkey?
I think in Turkey there was a viable, you know, there was a viable threat to a coup. There was
You don't
huge
think that
dissension.
That was astroturfed? You don't think that I mean, think about this. So this was the most bizarre thing, right?
Yeah.
So a coup happens, right? The president goes on Facebook to, you know, call the people into the streets.
Yep.
The coup is wrapped up within a few hours.
Yeah.
And crucially, even though the president is right there in Istanbul, the coup, the plotters of the coup don't even go and capture him, which is like coup making 101.
Yeah.
You go and capture the existing leader.
Yeah.
So it doesn't feel much like a legit coup. Feels kind of astroturf.
It may have been engineered by Erdogan to get more power.
But what is the direction for Turkey? Is Turkey moving towards democracy, or is it moving more towards a sort of Putin-esque totalitarianism?
It feels like it's moving more toward a military dictatorship of some kind. But having said that...
What about Poland?
Well, having said that, I feel like that may be so, but Turkey is also having to deal with... the Kurdish threat and ISIS, and Turkey's also going to have to and does want to be an inclusive member of Europe and of
some of the Turks. There are two different Turkeys, right? Yeah. There's the Kemal Ataturk Turks who are democratic and westernizing, and you know capitalism and all that sort of stuff. And then there's the vast hinterland, which is conservative and that's not what they want, right? Yeah. And the point is that currently in ascendance is the Erdogan model, where you are pushing towards, you know, a strong central leadership that does not promote dissent. Like he's, you know, removed all the university professors from their jobs, right? So this is not fit Brian's narrative, which is, again, sort of, you know, that everything is going to work out. And also, you know, it's not just there, right?
Yeah.
Was Brexit the right move? Do we think that Brexit drives towards prosperity and global trade?
We don't know yet. It may very well become a tax haven. It might be. It seems that
maybe,
you know, I don't know yet.
Maybe,
you know,
theoretically.
But I do think that was Brexit was voted in by older people who were given a lot of promises, not by the young British.
That's right.
So if anything, what I'm seeing is a division, divisions within countries, the way there is in this country.
100%. Yeah. But the point is that the guiding principle of the Caliphate is sex, right? And so if the idea of the Caliphate is sex, you know, does Brexit promote sex? Does it promote swapping?
No. The problem with the Caliphate is that you'd have to combat something that's very, very human, and that is tribalism.
Well, but that's the point. But what you have to do is it's the same thing as Muhammad, right? So Muhammad, what he did was he unified the tribes, and he created a tribe that was greater than any of the individual tribes.
Yes.
And that is the point of the Caliphate.
So are you saying that I should come out of a cave?
Yeah.
With a bunch of...
You should come out of a man cave.
With a bunch of quote-unquote religious texts, something that was dictated to me on high. Are you saying that I have spoken to God?
I am saying that whatever the method of revelation was, whether you attribute it to books that you've read...
The problem is I don't have an English accent. It'd be very hard to come out and speak as though if you're from England and you speak this way, people will listen to you. I have spoken to God, everyone.
But Brian, what would you say that your... What accent would you say your career has mostly been based on?
Well, I know that... I know Donald Trump, and I really mean this. I spoke to God. He's a terrific guy. And I'll tell you something. He hates Hillary. She's a corrupt bitch. And he hates her. And I hate her too. And if God hates her and I hate her, then you should hate her too. And I really mean that. She's a cheater. She's a liar. And her emails are disgraceful. She was a terrible, terrible person.
But Brian,
that's a bad Donald Trump. I apologize.
But Brian, what accent has your career mostly been based on?
Well, of course, you know, from.
So
from
the point is that if.
Hey, dude, don't. Kid, that's not my whole career, you son of a bitch.
No, I would say if you had to base your career on one accent.
I suppose I do this character. On
the yeah, planet. Exactly. So the point is
it's from Lebanon.
If you're going to. Exactly. So why? Fine. You don't have to be from Saudi, right? You can come out of a cave in Lebanon and you can speak in, you know, a Lebanese accent. You can mm-hmm. sound like a shawarma maker, right? And, you know.
Al-Akbar!
Exactly. And within the shawarma was written like the inscription.
I have spoken to God. Everyone, listen to me. Allah said that everybody is the same. But that is what they say.
Yeah. So but if we're talking about like, you know, yes, humans are tribal, but I think that's the point is that we have a bunch of sort of regional tribes right now that are ultimately holding us back, and we need to carve out some sort of new human first identity. That was the term that a friend of mine used, Marie.
Human first.
Human first, yeah. Where you can have whatever secondary identities you want, but that fundamentally you're leading from the place of that shared humanity with a recognition that you've picked up some sort of culture and that you may have to overcome that.
Until there is a scarcity of resources. See The Killing Fields, our wonderful author Bloodlands.
Yeah.
Jared Diamond's example of how quickly become genocidal.
That's right.
When there isn't enough water
yeah.
for their children.
So the point is that there's that danger that we turn genocidal. But the other alternative is the Dutch model, where you understand that your environment is under threat, and so therefore you have the ability to band together against the common threat.
Sir, you just said band together and common. Sounds a lot like communist. I'm going to need to see your
Brian,
papers.
You, I mean,
it listen, sounds like
can we go back 15 minutes where you were
we
saying
we got a like, communist on our hands?
Can we go back 15 minutes to the part where you said like, oh yeah, the communist ideology, the sort of thing a person could resonate with and get behind. And
I'm just saying.
That,
I'm just saying.
Let's take that and just play that on loop for your father and watch as he dies.
You and I have both, in this 36 minutes, you and I
yeah.
have said enough to land us in a political prison in a lot of countries.
Yeah.
And to be put up against a wall and shot.
I think pretty much.
Because you've alluded to the fact that we need to all come together
yeah.
and get rid of our tribalism, which could a government censor or a general, whoever in certain countries could extrapolate that to mean this guy is a fucking communist sympathizer.
Yeah.
And he is spreading his message very, very subtly. We need to bring him in and ask him some fucking questions, but soften him up first. Make sure he doesn't sleep. Make sure yeah. he doesn't have any water, and don't let him go to the bathroom, and then bring him in here. I want to talk to this guy. And by the way, put his feet in a bucket of ice.
Well, you don't have to worry about a Dutchman not going to the bathroom, because I've eaten enough cheese in the last 2 weeks.
Oh my God. He just all stopped up.
Huh? So much cheese. Fuck, it's amazing.
I'll eat the shit out of that cheese. Much cheese in yeah. Europe that my face, I didn't recognize my face. I literally, my sister was like, Brian, I don't recognize you. Your nose is a potato. And I said, it's fucking worth it. Where's the knife and where's that wheel of cheese? It was cave aged.
Yeah. But Brian, I mean, listen, you know, communist, yeah. Also, I don't know that, you know, there are a lot of imams that wouldn't necessarily like the things that we've said on this podcast, right?
Look, the caliphate.
Yeah.
The caliphate should be, it's very simple.
Yeah.
The caliphate should be the Constitution of the United States.
That's a large part of what it is, yeah.
Yeah. I think that the Founding Fathers solved the political problem. I think the Founding Fathers got it right. I don't think we need to add or subtract anything from that.
No, but I do think you need to figure out some sort of global contract. Because that's the problem is that, yes, there is the contract.
It's not enforceable. Global contracts, I mean, communism.
Hold on. Yeah. What does it take to enforce the contract of the Constitution?
Look, you do need a police force. You do need an army.
Yeah.
But you see, when you try to create a global contract, Karl Marx tried to do that with something called communism. And he said, workers unite. The problem is that French workers were not going to unite with Italian workers. They were more loyal to their French aristocrats, their French overlords.
Mm-hmm.
They were more loyal to anybody who was French.
Their French idea, of course they are. But yeah. The point is that they can also reorganize their tribes in the same way that there were tribes in the Arabian Peninsula, and Muhammad created a greater identity, which was this.
It feels a little bit like trying to tell a bunch of children to share and stop fighting. They don't.
No, they fight for dominance.
Better maybe is to lead by example.
That's what I'm saying. And so the point is that the caliphate begins here.
Yes.
And we figure out between us what it is, and then people will choose to join our tribe. You know, Muhammad.
Again, I think it was figured out, and I think it was signed in 1776. I think that
it's a large part of it, but it needs to be articulated more clearly, because the point is that, you know, there were certain assumptions that the founding fathers made, right, that were reasonable assumptions because they were surrounded by people of more or less the same culture.
Well, then what you do is you say, we are in danger of losing our republic.
Yeah.
And this is how, and this is why, and this is how, and here is how we get back to our
United States. But for example, one of the core things that the founding fathers assumed, because that was the culture of 1776, was that people would constantly be trying to improve their own understanding, reading books, learning voraciously, and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. Is that part of the American culture today?
I don't think so. I don't think it's part of Russian culture. I don't think it's part of Turkish culture.
It's not part of a whole bunch of cultures.
No, and which is why as soon as there's a threat,
As
soon as there's a threat, you get a law and order president.
That's right.
I.e. a dictator, demagogue, and the above. And you get a whole bunch of people get thrown in handcuffs and thrown in dungeons. See Turkey. See, you know, or they get just eliminated if they're telling the truth as a journalist. See Russia. And a thousand other places. And I think that the important thing to keep in mind for Turkey and for Russia and these countries, these strongmen need to understand, and it needs to be argued and it needs to be won, that kind of governance makes for a weaker country, a weaker footprint, not a stronger one. And I actually believe that. I think that, you know, that works in the short run, but it doesn't work in the long run. Turkey is going to isolate itself. Turkey is going to not do itself any favors commerce-wise, economically. We do need them.
It's isolating itself from the United States, but at the same time, it's forming stronger alliances with Russia.
Good. Have fun with that.
Well, that's...
Have fun aligning with Russia so that you're going to align yourself with guns. Some of them don't work. And you're going to turn your back on Europe and the United States with all the goodies. You go ahead and do that. That's got to be the dumbest shit I've ever heard in my life.
It may be dumb shit, Brian, but the point is that, you know, Putin is actively interfering with the U.S. election, you know, and is trying to prop up similar figures, right? So the point is there is a real threat to democracy and to the free market that is going on in the world right now.
I don't think so.
I
don't think that you're giving the Russians and Putin too much credit. I don't think he's that much of a threat.
I
think he certainly is a threat to the average Syrian now that he's bombing places like Aleppo with cluster bombs.
If the free market is about free trade, right? Brexit was a step away from free trade, right?
Brexit was really about, I honestly think Brexit was about immigration.
It's a large part of it, but that's still a step away from... It's an emotional vote.
Yeah.
It's a dialing down. It's an isolation. It's a move away from free trade, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the point is free trade lost there. You know, we moved further from the caliphate, right, with Brexit. Yes?
I don't know that that was the underlying sentiment.
That
may be a byproduct.
Yeah, but that's kind of like saying, you know, the goal was to shoot a gun, and I happened to have shot myself in the foot.
Well, the byproduct
is that I have no foot.
But the motivation, so I think Russian motivation is dominance and territorial acquisition. That's such an outdated.
It may be. You may think it's outdated, but the point is that, you know, history. I mean, there are these two. There's the Western model of history, which is sort of that it all sort of moves forward in a straight line and moves up. And there's the Chinese model of history, which is cyclical. that it's cyclical and it repeats itself. And the reality is that the best model of history comes from combining these two, where there's a series of cycles that repeat themselves, but the overall trend is upwards.
That's right.
Right.
That's a good point.
Now, the point is that in it is in our interest, right, to make sure that we aren't on the downslope of one of those cycles, right? It may be that in the course of 1,000 years, everything figures itself out, but we're not around for very long, right? So personally and subjectively, we need to...
It's true that you're saying this, but I don't think it's lost on the vast majority of, let's say, Latin Americans, Americans, Canadians, Europeans, and I'm just going to take those people, which is a pretty large part of the population. I'm going to leave out, you know, Asian, you know. But for the most part, those people are all would all agree that in many ways the Russians and the Turks, as an example, are on the wrong side of history. And that they are not,
are you sure about that?
I am. I do know what you're saying, where we have this rise in right-wing parties that are nationalistic in Austria and even in Sweden and stuff. But, you know, again, that, in my opinion, is honestly less about racism. It really is. And it's more about people who are terrified of losing a way of life that not only they love but has benefited them for millennia.
Exactly.
It is their identity. So when you have Dutchmen, when you have when you have Austrians, whoever they might be, who feel as though they are in a they who don't recognize their own country sometimes, or they feel like they're being quote unquote overrun by cultures they have nothing in common with, that don't want to assimilate. When they feel like they're being run over by trucks by some Islamic fundamentalist, you can understand that they say, guys, we've got to be more careful about who we let into this country. That's an emotional and even, I'm sorry, irrational response.
It is 100% understandable.
Yeah, it's not about being racist.
No, and that's the point. It's about defending tribe and defending culture, right? And you know,
and identity, and,
exactly.
You know,
and these
and
are,
love and what you love
and everything that we've ever discussed on this podcast fits 100% with that, right? So this is not. This is not a defense of sort of the, you know, Hillary Clinton finger in the ears, let's pretend we're all the same.
Yeah.
Because again, hardware is the same, but culture is very, very different.
Yes.
And culture has to be preserved and protected and nurtured and all that sort of stuff.
Right.
But the point is that yes, you know, what I think it's important to recognize that bad ideas are winning. Bad ideas are winning on the left, and bad ideas are winning on the right.
Yes.
The bad idea on the left is the idea that culture doesn't matter, and the bad idea on the right is that we're just going to hunker down and isolate ourselves. But it's worth recognizing that both of those ideas are bad.
I love that.
Yeah, and you have to articulate a third and better idea, which is that, yes, which is all grounded in the idea that, you know, our hardware is the same, but our software is different. And so, for example, when you have a place like Holland that has a culture that is pretty good at delivering prosperity and wealth and all that sort of stuff, right, that there are elements of that culture that then have to be prerequisites for joining Dutch society. So, for example, you have to have a commitment to freedom and tolerance and all of these sorts of things that enable trade and all that sort of stuff. You have to learn the language of the country so that you can get economic opportunities and so you can participate, right? And, you know, fundamentally, those need to be prerequisites for joining the society, because you are, when you're joining a country, you're trying to join a tribe. And there are, you have to figure out what is the set of things that are essential, right? So it may be essential to have a certain attitude and treatment of women. It might be essential to speak Dutch. But what are the things that are non-essential? You do not necessarily have to consume your body weight in cheese every year.
You don't have to be 6 foot five.
You don't have to be 6 foot five. Those things are irrelevant.
Right.
But the point is that there are going to be, for each country, you have to start to figure out what are these two lists? What are the things that are essential, value and belief-wise? And what are the things that are non-essential and negotiable?
Yeah, but then don't you run the risk of imposing a belief system Well, I guess we do that in this country.
That's the
point. You have to swear allegiance to the flag. You have to, your citizenship is pretty, it's a vetting process, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you've got to accept certain things about this country.
Well, and the point is that I don't think that we're good enough about being specific about what are those things that are essential. Mm. Because the reality is that yes, we've lived all over the world and people believe very different things. And those beliefs determine their prosperity and success.
That's true.
And so if you want that prosperity and success, then you have to be very clear about what are the parts of human software that lead to prosperity and success. So, for example, to go back to your friends at Time Life, there's an excellent book that came out that called The Short and Tragic Life of Robert Peace, which I would recommend that everybody read. And it's all about a young man who grew up in Newark in the ghettos. He was an African-American guy and did very well in high school, got into Yale, majored in biochemistry at Yale, did very well in biochemistry, but along the way to start paying his bills, starts dealing drugs, right, to the local Yale kids. And then after graduation, moves back to Newark and gets into a life of drug dealing in Newark and then ends up dying in a drug shootout. And what you find out is that the idea that education as narrowly defined as acquisition of certain knowledge is not enough, right? Because the fact is that his father was a drug dealer who was in jail for double homicide. And, you know, there are issues of belonging and tribe. What you're trying to do when you're trying to get someone like Robert Peace out of the ghetto is you're trying to get him to defect from one tribe to another. Mm. Right? Or alternatively, to go back and redefine his own tribe and reinvent his tribe.
ISIS to come over to the caliphate.
That exactly.
Leave your caliphate, come to the caliphate.
Exactly. But there isn't anywhere, as far as I know, outside of this podcast, is anyone trying to articulate a culture-based view of the world that is, you know, puts our shared humanity first, but recognizes that we have different culture and that we have to deal with those cultural differences. And sometimes we have to be very clear that there are membership requirements to joining a nation or any club or any tribe, and that certain tribes will want to change their own values and beliefs to provide greater prosperity and happiness to their own members.
I love the way you button this discussion up. And when I go to box now,
yeah,
I'm going to be thinking about that.
That's
as I
good.
Try to punch somebody in the fucking face.
That's good. And to your point, we want to lead by example.
Yeah.
The point is that, you know, it's like Muhammad, which I'm constantly trying to like pigeonhole you as Muhammad, as
Thank
the
you.
Next Muhammad.
Thank you. Brian doesn't seem to ring off.
But see, the problem is actually with you
and if
being...
people, and by the way, if 100 years from now, or yeah. 700 years from now, or 1400 years from now,
yeah.
if somebody draws a cartoon mocking me, please don't stab them.
But remember, there was the life of Brian.
This
right?
is true.
So the point is that you as Jesus figure, actually, you know, Monty Python
I like that
already
you're casting me as this. I can walk on water and I can heal.
But actually, I think that's the problem is I don't know that you want to be Muhammad, because that's the whole point is Muhammad can't be depicted. And in a
this
thousand
is very
years,
true.
You're not. Gonna...
But when they do depict me, I want them to depict me with high cheekbones, very broad shoulders, and an impossible penis. Yeah.
So the point is that, you know, I mean, none of the existing sort of Christ figures are really going to be satisfying.
Yeah.
It's going to have to be something better than that. So what you do want is, it's not that you
Well,
want,
how about no figure at all? How about just an idea? How about depicting me as a brain? Hello. Of course, Hunter Motz would be behind with a long reed whispering things into that brain.
Yeah, and then
a brain and an ear.
Yeah.
And a big mouth. But Hunter Motz is behind me.
But then behind me, or, you know, I mean, that's the point.
But it would be another division, because you'd have Motzians and you'd have Caliphate and you'd have Callians.
But the point is that the ideas are more powerful than any one individual. But at the same time, you know, we need some figure to adore. And I think, you know, Brian, I think you're great as...
Are you trying to say you adore me, Hunter?
I do. And I think, you know, the world will in thousands of years. I think that's what it's all going to come down to.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'll be in Gotham, at the Gotham Comedy Club in New York City, September 16th and 17th, if you want to touch me and look at me in person or ask questions about what Hunter Motz is really like. This has been a great, another great discussion that I love. And I like the way you button it all up.
Yeah.
But we have work to do then.
We have so much work to do.
So we have to come up with... So once again, before we leave, encapsulate what the mission is.
The mission is to define a new tribe, right? A tribe that provides. So one of the biggest books that everybody like keeps tweeting me about, which is an awesome book and also people should read, is Sebastian Younger's new book, which is about tribe and all about, you know, all of these guys who go off to war. They have this tremendous sense of belonging and the band of brothers and all that stuff, and they come back and they don't have that, right? And that's part of the reason why transitioning back into society is so difficult for a lot of veterans. But so there is this need for tribe, and there is a need for belonging, and there is a need for historical purpose. And so the point is, for all of us collectively, anybody who wants to join, right, it starts with us, but any of the listeners and followers, to define a new tribe with a new set of beliefs and values that is able to deliver greater prosperity and happiness and all the good things in the world than has ever existed before.
Hunter, you ambitious motherfucker.
Of course. Why be anything else?
All right. Well, let's get together again. This next week.
Yeah.
Monday, Tuesday. This has been part one of the Callan Fake.
You've been listening to The Brian Callan Show with Brian Callan. Be sure to like him on Facebook. Just search for Brian Callan Comedy. And follow him on Twitter. Just search for @BrianCallan. You can also find him online by visiting his website. Just go to briancallan.com. Until next time, bye-bye.